today, I feel very honored to make use of the powers vested upon me for this very short time. And hopefully that we hope that those that are here are going to be able to do their work so that we can also be released and go back and finish the tasks that lie ahead of us. And without wasting a lot of time, I am going to ask the leaders of the Mrs. Jha, did you have your hand up? Okay.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I do wish to point out that we're only 5 members of the committee, if I count correctly. 2 are from the DA, 1 from the IFP, 1 from the Minority Front, and only 1 from the ruling party. So we've just gained a new member. I think we're still not a quorum, but it is a point of concern that it's the parliamentary session has started. We are in parliamentary mode. All politicians have also other commitments, as you've pointed out, but some are here, and we can actually should expect the same from everybody, but especially the ruling party. That is a point of concern.
Thank you, Mrs. Dreher. Your point is noted and well taken. I think we'll communicate with the other members. However, the department is already here. We are going to take the briefing. We now want to consider whether we'll continue with the deliberations tomorrow once we know whether the people have an apology only for today, because the major day is going to be when we take the deliberations on the briefings that we will be taking today. And I hope that is acceptable. And like I was saying, I am going to allow the leaders of the teams, that is Mr. Mkonto and Mr. Serowe, to introduce their delegation. Thank you. In any order.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. The delegation that we have from the department and the UIF is as follows. We have Ms. Tina Rose, is the director in the DG's office. We have Mr. Tyron Chitaosi, who is the executive manager, risk management. We have Mr. Isaac Modise, who is holding 2 posts, one of an acting manager communication and the chief information officer of the UIF. We have Chris Mills, the executive manager operations at the UIF. Mr. Rismati Chauke, Executive Manager, HRM. Ms. Lizanne Bredenham, Executive Manager Reporting. We also have the Chief Financial Officer of the Fund, Mr. Ludovic Ferreira. We have also our board member, who's representing the Labour constituency, Mr. Sipiwe Kango. We also have Ms. Loni Shwampaka, who is a parliamentary officer. I'll hand over to Mr. Mkonto to introduce from the Compensation Fund.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. All the best for 2009 and all the blessings that comes with it. Members, I'm the Compensation Commissioner, Mr. Shadrach Mkonto. With me, I've got Ms. Victoria Maluleke, who's the personal assistant to the commissioner. And next to her there, I've got Ms. Lebu van Wyk, who is the acting manager finance, the lady next to Ms. Maluleke. And next to Ms. van Wyk, I've got Mr. Vikesh Sikerson, who is the chief information officer of the Compensation Fund. Next to him there, I've got Mr. Lingolo Chokola, who is the acting executive manager compensation. And next to him there is a familiar face to the members, Dr. Agri Murake, who's the chief medical officer of the Compensation Fund. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We will now, I think, in the preferred order, We will ask Mr. Sarowe to give us a briefing. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The structure of our presentation is as follows. We start with the financial performance. We'll come to operations and the decentralization of functions. We will talk about our achievements with regard to the stakeholders' engagement, people management, the social security reforms, and also we'll deal with corporate governance under achievements and challenges. We'll also deal with the financial information, where we'll look at the budget and our achievements with regard to the targets. We'll also look at the Auditor General's report, and we'll also conclude where we will talk about our outlook for the future. Chairperson, in terms of financial performance, in 2007 and 8, the fund performed better as compared to the previous years. This can be supported by the following achievements. We have achieved an increase of contributions collection to the total amount of 9.1 billion, representing 13.75% increase in comparison to the previous financial year, which is 2006 and 2007. In 2006 and 2007, 8 billion was collected, so it is clear that we actually increased our contribution by 1 billion. Payments made to our beneficiaries, and the total number of the beneficiaries that we paid is 526,872, and the total amount therefore is 2.9 billion. This is a 3% increase as compared to 2006 and 2007. In 2006 and 2007, the fund paid out benefits to the total amount of 2.8 billion. There was light increase between 2006 and 2007 and 2007 and 2008, and this positive margin was perceived as to the result of economic strength with minimal job losses at that time. The surplus, Chairperson, that we have recorded as a fund is a whopping 6.8 billion. This was 14% more than the surplus for 2006 and 2007. And the surplus recorded in 2006 and 2007 was 6 billion. Clearly, we have a surplus, which in private sector terms is called a profit, of 800 million more than the previous year. The efficient implementation of the investment strategies and the proper controls led to the fund investment yielding 2.1 billion. Chairperson, this is the money that we receive from investing our money in the bonds, in the stock market, and also in the money market. The total income, which will be our contribution plus the investment income, stood at 11.3 billion for the year. The total value of assets amounted to 27.8 billion as compared to 2006 and 2007, where the assets were towards 20.6 billion. This increase in value is attributed to investment strategies that the fund has adopted. Chairperson, from every year we get independent actuaries who come and evaluate us as a fund. This actuarial evaluation were performed and yielded some interesting results. This valuation focused on long-term solvency of the fund by projecting the contributions, benefits payment and expenses over the next 10 years. The valuation indicated that the fund is in a sound financial position as at the end of March 2008. However, the economic turmoil facing the world and the country affects the fund in a negative way because of the new job losses. We have started to see the increase in the turnout of clients at our labor center. We are dealing with these challenges through the implementation of a social plan. This chairperson is the social plan is when we go to the clients where they are, if they are massive retrenchment, and we process and accept applications at their place of work without actually expecting them to come to our labor center. So we are taking services closer to communities. It is also important that we need to have another actuarial valuation which is undertaken to project that sustainability under the economic conditions, because when that evaluation was done, nobody anticipated that we'll have such economic meltdown throughout the world. One of our key indicators was to reduce overpayments and work and draw by improving recovery overpayments by 5% as compared to 2006 and 7. Members will remember that in the previous financial year, which is 2006 and 7, this was a concern from the Office of the Auditor General. However, we are proud to say we have achieved 16.4 million was recovered in 2007 and 8 from clients as compared to 9.4 million for 2006 and 7. With no doubt, 74% increase is acceptable, but there are still challenges that the fund needs to address, such as the chairperson. Employers are not timely sending us information of their employees, so employment records leading to continual drawing of benefits by the public continues. As we've indicated previously, our database or systems are integrated. So if a person starts to work and he doesn't inform us that he's working, he comes to claim. If the employer gives us that information, our systems will stop that overpayment. But we have seen the increase in the declaration process, but however, it's still a concern because we still have overpayments. Now, recovery of overpayments also is a cause for concern, because while we are boasting about 74% increase, is also an increase in overpayment. But Chairperson, I need to report that this financial year, at the end of December, we have seen the decline in overpayments, which means all the processes that we put in place to deal with this particular problem is coming to fruition. Chairperson, we have a summary of financial achievement as at 31st March 2008, we'll see that this is a very good performance. Our contributions have increased by 14%. Our investment income have increased by 56%, which we've indicated is because of prudent financial management in the fund. Our benefit expenditure have only increased by 3%. Our operational expenditure only has increased by 8%, which indicates that we're actually managing our processes and finances in a proper manner. Because you can see that this is actually below the inflation rate. The net surplus of the fund has increased by 14%. Our investments with the PIC have increased by 34%. Our technical reserves have also increased by 14%. Our accumulated surplus, Chairperson, as at the 31st of March 2008, which is all the surpluses that we've accumulated throughout this year, is sitting at 15.4 billion, and this increase is 57%. Our total assets, including the buildings that we own, have increased by 35%. Chairperson, it's important for us to look at our budget and see whether we have used more money or we have used less money to indicate where the savings came into being. Now, we budgeted to receive 8.7 billion in terms of our revenue. Now, we received 9.1, and we see that we have exceeded our target by 427 million rand. Our investment income, we only expected to receive 1.3 billion, but we received 2.1, and that indicates that we have exceeded our target by 839 million rand. Our benefit expenditure, we actually thought we were going to pay more money, and we actually budgeted for 3.9, but we only paid 2.9, and the savings there is 991 million. But it's also very important, Chairperson, to indicate that we don't have the backlogs. Because some people may say, no, you have actually paid less because of the backlogs. We don't have backlogs, and we'll indicate that when we deal with the issues of decentralization of functions. Also, very interesting, our operational expenditure, we budgeted for 924 million, but we only utilized 727. We saved, in this regard, 196 million. Our surplus, based on the projections of the benefit expenditure, we expected only 5.2 billion, but we actually realized 6.8 billion. And the variance here is we exceeded our target by 1.6 billion. Chairperson, if we come to our operations, we see our achievements continue to show in the operations of the fund, where as at the end of the financial year under review, which is 31st March 2008, the fund has been able to register a total of 663,000 domestic workers and 700,000 domestic employers. This is a great milestone in ensuring that vulnerable workers are covered and protected by the fund. We got some statistics, Chairperson, that the total number of employers is actually 800,000. So we still have a deficit of 100,000 with regard to domestic workers, and we will actually do our best to reach that particular target. There is still a lot of work to be done in this area. Especially in the taxi industry, we're still battling in the taxi industry. We have experienced a slow breakthrough in the taxi industry in terms of employer registration. And moving forward is our concerted effort in addressing this challenge. Our communication campaigns will be intensified, and constant engagement with role players in the taxi industry has taken place and will continue to take place. The problem we have with the taxi industry, Chairperson, is that the driver is also the owner. So we have that particular challenge, and also there are some problems that the taxi owners have where workers don't stay long. They move from one employer to another. But we're not going to take that as a train smash. We'll continue to engage them and register. I need to indicate that we only have 5,000 of the employers registered on our database. Continuing in terms of operations, increased number of employees on the database, 5% increase, Chairperson, was our target as compared to 2006 and 2007. We've registered 89,593 more employers on the database. The total of registered employers by the end of March 2008 was 1.1 million. A total of 139,943 new employees were added to our database. The total registered employees on the database of the fund at the end of March 2008 is standing now, Chairperson, as 7.3 compared to 7.2 previously. In response to the needs of our clients, the fund received claims during the year and approved 97.5%, Chairperson, which is the higher approval rate. And those claims are representing 526,872 clients. The small margin of 2.5, which has been rejected, is for the clients that are not entitled to payments because of, among others, the resignation clause, Chairperson, because as we speak now, we still don't pay people who are resigning from work. We have managed to pay benefits to 526,872 clients to the total amount of 2.9 billion, clearly More than 500,000 households were assisted during the hardships of unemployment. As part of the active labor market policy, Chairperson, the fund is introducing the training program for the unemployed. We don't want to only pay, we want to also to start to train those who come to our offices. This program was approved by the Minister of Labor and will be piloted in Gauteng North and also Gauteng South. It's not like we're forgetting about the rural areas. We'll also extend this particular pilot once it's successful speedily to rural areas. Chairperson, the decentralization of functions, some people may say this is not strategic, but to the ordinary workers who come to our offices, it is very, very important. In turning to better and improved service delivery, the fund engaged in the decentralization of functions in the year under review. The fund has decentralized its processing functions to the lowest level in the provinces. Functions were decentralized to the labor centers. The labor centers with processing functions were increased from 32 in 2006 and 7 to 57 into 2007 and 8. We are still continuing this financial year with this process. This implies that a client claim will be processed and finalized in that labor center, unlike previously where documents were sent from the labor center to the processing offices, and that caused a major delays. The functions that were decentralized are as follows: the processing of claims, the adjudications of claims, and also the finalization of a claim, which entails also the eventual payment of a claim. Now, under operations, this we talk about the number of benefits payment per category, so that members can see where there was a decline and where there was an increase. Our network benefit, which is unemployment benefit, has actually increased. In 2007, it was 1.9 billion. Now it's 2 billion. The illness benefit has also increased. It was 179 million, is now 187. Also very interestingly, Chairperson, is that the maternity benefit has also increased from 418 million to 460. And we can be proud and say our outside broadcast, when we went from province to province, telling people about our services, has actually borne fruit, because people who were in the higher categories, where the middle class were not actually claiming, but they know that there's a benefit that is also available for them. So we see a lot of parents coming to our offices to claim. Adoption benefits has decreased. It was 708,000. Now it's only 670,000. The dependent benefits have also decreased, as a person. It was 247 million. Now it's 242 million. Now the total benefits previously was 2.8. Now it's 2.9. Now, changes in benefit payments, that is the adjustment that is done by actuaries. There was a decrease last year in our reserves by 264 million, and that gave us 2.75 in terms of total benefits. And this financial year under review, there was a 308, which we had to add, and the total was now 3.2 billion. We're not working in isolation with the total profits in the country. We know that the President Mbeki indicated that we need to engage ourselves in social security and retirement reform. The fund played a very important role in that regard. That as part of the process of the social security reforms in the country, the fund has participated in the debate and planning processes of the social security reforms. A number of research papers were produced, Chairperson, and presented by the fund to the interdepartmental task team on social security. We produced a paper which was very extensive, which was looking at the merits and the demerits of a wage subsidy. We also produced a paper on the institutional arrangement on the comprehensive social security, where we're actually contributing as to how this fund should be structured in future. We also produced a paper on the improvement of unemployment insurance system in South Africa, and that paper, we criticize ourselves and say we only pay. It's high time we involve ourselves in active labor market policy. That's why this year we started with the process of a training program. Stakeholder engagement. We conducted 4 advocacy campaigns per province and 6 national ones, Chairperson. We have partnered with South African Broadcasting Corporation in conducting 6 outside broadcasts, wherein the intention was to bring awareness to the broader society about their rights and also obligations regarding the UIF. We have exhibited and marketed the fund at, among other places, the following shows: the franchise business opportunities where we want to get hold of at business people, South African Women's Inventors and Innovators Symposium, SAWIS, Annual Municipality Domestic Workers Day, Annual National Skills Development Exhibition, and Small Business Opportunities. Again, 2007 and 8 has been the hallmark of campaigns in the taxi industry. These industries will be treated with serious engagements to ensure that compliance moves to an acceptable level. We also recognize that people are our greatest assets. In terms of people management, the fund values its human capital and strive to continuously develop its staff. In 2007 and 8, the fund has, in the spirit of human capital development, awarded salaries to 18 staff members. Our annual report also indicates that some of the salaries that we awarded were for people to do their masters in business administration so that they can help us to manage the fund better. We continue to train and develop all staff. These are the short courses at Chairperson. We've trained 394 officials on more than 30 training initiatives and courses. We also comply with the National Skills Development Act, where we produce the workplace skills plan, and we also have implemented it in terms of training. We're contributing in the skills development of the country. Corporate governance, Chairperson, is also very important. Again, in 2007 and 8, the fund obtained and received an unqualified audit report from the Office of the Auditor General. This was the third year in succession from 2005 and 6 to 2007 and 8. Management and staff remain committed to the good cause by ensuring that the control environment of the fund is good. Compliance to legislation has been a cornerstone of our operations and will continue to improve. Without cutting and blowing our own trumpet, the fund is regarded as the first compliant entity by the parent company, which is the Department of Labor. We have worked closely with the Executive Authority, the Minister of Labor, Mr. Membatiz Mdlalane, and the US Board in addressing the strategic intent and challenges of the fund. That's why we have the results that we've actually shown, Chairperson. We've also welcomed the new board members in this current year, and the good work will continue. We have one of them with us here. Chairperson, on the last issue of the Auditor General's issues, there are challenges that we have faced. We have two emphasis of matters. The first one is challenges with regard to declarations. Our progress in addressing this challenge is that now there's a 3-year cycle verification started to verify the claims that have been paid. There's a training on new processes in all offices that has taken place. We have implemented new processes and procedure in our processing and labor center and provinces. The problem I have here, Chairperson, which is below the error rate is currently below 5%. It's when people put information in the computer. For instance, they can give a person more service than he has or less. So that I have to go back and check in a 3-year cycle what those problems are so that we can update the credits that people have. The other processes that we've introduced is that we don't want the person to capture and the information is left as it is. We want somebody else to check the information that has been captured to for verify that it is correct. And we can say now this process is yielding a good result. Although it has actually made the processing of claims to take a bit of time, but it's good that we've added additional controls in this regard. Overpayments, which is work and draw, that was another issue. The operational systems are enhanced to avoid overpayments, as I've indicated, the integration of our systems and databases. When the information is on the system, a person is claiming, the system will stop that. Recovery methods initiated have been implemented. For the past 3 years, we have actually come with recovery methods. I can indicate to you now that we also use the state attorneys. We also use the outside service providers to help us to recover the money. But the most effective method is when we actually withdraw the money before we pay. The recovery method, if a person comes, he owes us some 100 rand. Before we pay, we actually have to deduct that 100 rand before, so that people can know in future that they don't have to do that, and if they do it, we'll still catch them. The debt collection procedures guidelines have been also implemented. The last issue was on the management of information, performance information, which is the new framework from National Treasury. We are happy to indicate that we have developed the integrated performance management policy, has started in the fund. The strategic plan for 2009-10-2011-12 is aligned with this National Treasury framework. And we also want the internal audit to constantly conduct internal audit reviews on performance information to determine that the managers actually comply with that. If the person says, we have achieved an increase in our revenue, there must be evidence to support that particular achievement or assertion. In conclusion, Chairperson, the fund has appreciated the terrible successes and acknowledge some of the challenges facing the organization, and we continue our strides to address these challenges. In this year, 2008 and 9, we have started to address these challenges. We are on a roadmap to improve the utilization of the e-filing system, which is the sister system to the e-filing system that is utilized by the South African Revenue Services. We also have that. The development of a debt management system and the enterprise resource planning system, we want to integrate all our systems, Chairperson, under the enterprise resource planning system. That system is just a subsystem SAP. We also are introducing payroll inspectors or auditors, which will be the specialized form of inspectors. Those inspectors will be able to interrogate the payroll, determine whether companies are paying us less or more money. We also want to capacitate provincial offices and also our head office with regard to equipment, with regard to human resource management, and also with regard to the delegations of functions. Chairperson, before I end, in our annual report, last year we presented our annual report, there were some major mistakes there, but we are happy that this time around we don't have such errors. The only small problem is on page 26, under an overrate by salary band, and that's 91%, which is the fourth column. What is this? There was a dot. It's 9.1%, not 91%, Chairperson. So the printer only left that dot, Chairperson. With that, thank you very much.
Thank you, Narasra. Thank you very much. We are also very happy to note that the fund keeps on improving year to year, and I hope that you'll be able to sustain that for the future. However, we are happy also that you note that there might be challenges ahead of us with the current global challenges that will definitely affect us the our jobs that rely so much on the fund. But also to say that hotline members are advising their constituencies as to whether it is in that through that the fund is taking the services to the people, because that has been very critical for us because of the distances and all the delays that are caused. And we're hopeful that the issue of the delays caused by the employers that delay to give you the necessary information will be particularly interested in us as members to observe in the level of your domestic workers as to whether we are indeed improving there. And the challenge, which is the taxi industry, if there's any role we can play there that we might want to be indicated to us as to what role can we play, because I am very concerned that you've got a very little number of taxi owners that have been registered, and we know that everywhere we walk it's just taxis and taxis and taxis, and I think that's a little bit disappointing. But I'm now going to hand over to the members too. We know that we are not really deliberating, but I'm sure there will be quite a number of questions for clarity, so that as we deliberate we are well informed. Thank you. I hand over to the members now. Thank you, Mrs. Ray.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yes, it's a welcome kind of change, like a fresh breeze in the Department of Labor to have an entity here that's not got a qualified audit report. So congratulations on that. However, it doesn't mean you haven't got challenges. You've acknowledged that yourself. So we'll, and obviously the Oversight Committee will look particularly at the challenges and problems that you may face. You understand that. I have three questions. First one, your term over time, since you receive your claim and the actual payout, what is the average period then? And then, of course, flowing from that question 1A then, I suppose, some of the beneficiaries will fall outside of your own ideal time that you set. What are the main reasons for delayed payouts or, you know, not paying out within your own time that you set for yourselves? And second question, the chairperson has mentioned the vulnerable workers in terms of the domestic workers, taxi drivers, and then there's a third category, and that is mothers of new babies. And looking after our constituencies, I've got a number of complaints from agencies actually who work on behalf of mothers of newborn babies. You know, I've just become aware once again as a mother myself, but long time ago as a new grandmother, how difficult it is for mothers of new babies to get to the unemployment offices and to sit in the queue sometimes a whole day long to fill in all the forms and to go back again and again sometimes to claim. Mothers of new babies simply can't do that. And that's where these agencies come in and they play a very useful role. But I want to know what is your policy there, because complaints that I've received indicate that you're not keen to deal with the agencies, that you tell people go away, the clients or the beneficiaries must come in person. That's the problem. So could you please clarify that? And then my third question, Mr. Chair, is you mentioned that you're not just, don't regard yourselves as just an unemployment agency paying out now, but you also want to play a role making input into policy, in labour policy. Now, I'm very interested in what you would want to say about labour policy, what kind of input you would make. And I'm just thinking of your experience with the taxi industry that you mentioned, the high turnover in the taxi industry. People come and go. They're here tomorrow, today, tomorrow they come. It's maybe in some way they escape some of the strict labour legislation. Your comment on that is a bad thing, good thing. Should we not look at higher turnover in other industries as well, meaning people, maybe they go easy, but they also come easy, they are easily, more easily employed. I'd like your comment on that. Thanks. Thank you. Thank you so very much. Mine is also relating my questions are very, very similar, but I also want to know how long does it take to process a claim, and I'd also like to know, in terms of backlog, if you can give us
a percentage or maybe try to quantify it, you know, how many cases do you have on the backlog? And the vacancy rate at the actual firm, because I looked at the pie chart and you had a number of resignations there. And if you can tell us the actual vacancy rate at the fund at the moment. And also, you said you're trying to move away, you know, like a total reliance on the fund, on processing of claims, and trying to move towards training. And how do you ensure, I mean, we know what the labor market is like right now and the unemployment scenario. How do you ensure that the training is relevant, you know, with the South African labor market? So we're not just training and people are sitting there without jobs. How do you ensure that, you know, the training is relevant and they're going to get some form of employment afterwards? Those are the questions so far. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Aside from the report, I want to say thank you very much. It's a very comprehensive and informative report. My question is that how does the department feel now, as the payments are being made, to how do you go about assessing whether there is an increase in the unemployment or there is a decrease in the unemployment or increase in the employment? And how does the department handle when all payments are exhausted and the employee is still not employed? Have you got a direct system actually in place to help the actually unemployed people? Thank you, Charles.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. It's passed a very good picture. Just one or two clarifications on your slideshow. You talk about the payments to beneficiaries as 2.9 million, but on page 13, it's 3.2. Let's just clarify that a little bit. I know you mentioned that if you were a company, you'd be showing an extremely healthy profit, which is great. We'd hate the fund to go under. But is it your function to buy up a big profit, or should there be a better balance between, you know, if you have such a profit, what's the possibility of increasing the payments to the unemployed? Because it's more important that I get my money than you make a big profit. Perhaps you could comment on that. The other point is, I see the benefits on page 8, you know, the benefits are down and operational down. Well, as I say, it's linked a bit to the previous, you know, if your benefits are down, shouldn't the benefits start going up in view of the fact that you're a company with good profits? Operational expenditure, I hope it's down because of efficiency and not that this usual thing of so many state departments is where they suddenly have money because they got 30% vacancy, so they save money on that. I mean, could you just give us a little more information on that? Sorry, I made the notes as we went along. It's very interesting. I'm very pleased to see that you, on page 16, you have a number of bursaries to your staff. Are these bursaries tied on to a position that a certain amount of years will be given in service, or as soon as they get the bursary, the buzz off, seeing you qualifying them for something else, and then the old story? What is the situation nowadays? I seem to get conflicting information from state departments. I remember my first bursary, and either go and work for the Department of Justice for 4 years for a 3-year bursary, whereas then it was said that you're not allowed to do it. Oh, why are we on this situation now? The other thing is to develop staff. Again, you've trained a lot of people, and that's great. Again, my compliments. Just what's very important, and you could clarify this, you know, there's a big difference between attending courses and passing courses. I've sat through the last 8 years in both in the City Council and Parliament, where people attend courses, a lot of them pitch up in time for lunch, and then there's a bit after lunch. But everybody signed up in attendance. Well, that means nothing really, except for the few conscientious ones. What are you doing to ensure there's not only attending, that there's some measure of passing a course? Compliments on your unqualified audit, again. And also the skills training, a little more clarification. You see, are we going to, is your skills concerned with the people who are getting the benefits, or is it part of the general skills training? You know, is there a connection between I was getting unemployment benefits and now I'm either stop after a while and then, but at least I'm being trained so I won't need them in future, in a sense. Or is it part in the general pool of this, you know, we get thousands of statistics of people being trained and trained and trained, wait to get the Labour Department's report. But the connection between actual skills and relevance and so forth, if you could just see where do you fit in on this score. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mrs. Smith, if I could give you a if you can help me out, Liza, if you could give her a preference, because she is also going to be leaving soon, but perhaps you want to start with her questions while she's still around, and thank you very much.
Immediately they
So I think this is the way that we must work and taking hands in our country. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nemos, and I'm happy that at least you are making observation that indeed we found it taking services to the people, and we're happy to hear that. That's all. Let me hand over to you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Like you've indicated that we need to prioritize Ms. Moss's question. Yeah, we own our own buildings, which are also being inspected by our OHS division. We do our best to maintain those buildings, but most of our labor centers, we actually rent them from service providers. But we also monitor to ensure that they are maintained in a particular manner. But I need to indicate that our lease periods are not going up to a period of 20 years. There's 3 years. There's also 5 years. Now, you'll find that in a building in Mpumalanga, at that time, there was a small number of people. So at that time, the office was proper. But when as more people now, as we decentralize functions, you get more people employed, you find that the building is not adequate. But because you have a lease agreement, you just can't go out. You have to wait for that period. But we have a division in at the Department of Labor which monitors the buildings, the conditions, and from time to time we do terminate some lease agreements if clients are not complying with the OHS regulations, and we go to other buildings. So that particular building, I know that they are actually looking at it. As I think it's the one in Nelspruit. Yeah, the one in Nelspruit. Also, the minister has actually looked at it. There was concern in terms of how it is at that point. But we're looking at it, and we're going to sort it out. Now, the issue of seasonal workers is also a very good question, because if we look at our payments of benefits during a period of June up to September, we see an increase in our payments of benefits. Now, if a seasonal worker is working in Toyando, but he lives in Johannesburg, when it comes to claim in Johannesburg, he can claim in Johannesburg any other office, because what is required is the information, your ID, that you are in the database, and that's it. We don't say, no, you're supposed to go and claim in another province. But the coordination is in the side of monitoring. We actually monitor our benefits payments on a monthly basis. Where there's an increase, we see which sector. And we realize that is the sector where people within the period of June and September, where there's an increase in payments. Now, you're correct on the last point that if a company is retrenching a lot of people, we have a plan that we call a social plan, where we go to them. We've done it to the South African Airways, where we go to them, we put our systems and we put our offices there, and then we help people to claim. But I need to indicate that we have not been proactive to publicize this service yet, but most of the time the employers are approaching us and say, we are going to be brought to retrench many people now, can you help us? But we are starting now with this economic meltdown to tell people about this plan. We're already talking to some companies which are about to retrench many people so that we can come to where they are. Okay. Chairperson, your comments on the role that you can play in helping us to ensure that we have a lot of registration with regard to the taxi industry, it's actually a very important role that you can play. We believe that you have relationship with the unions. For instance, we've been communicating with Satau, and if, for instance, you can come in and help us in that regard, and also in your constituencies when we come to do the registration, because we also see that in most cases, the taxis have associations. So if you come and we know that you have this constituency, we can talk to you, and we talk to the association, and you can help us with that particular process. I believe there's a there's an important role that you can play. Chairperson, Ms. Dreyer asked some very important and strategic questions, and I think answering these questions will also help us as a fund to actually think about how we move forward in future. The first, I think, question was the time it takes us to process an application. Previously, it was 6 weeks, but that has now gone down to 5 weeks. But when we look, you don't find that all claims are paid within a period of 5 weeks. You'll find that when you look at statistics, 70% is paid within that particular target period, but others will obviously fall outside that. And the main reasons why we have this delay is that a person comes to our labor center, and then when you want to pay a claim, he's not on our database. Now, you have to start to communicate with the employer, to ask the employer to say, give us information about this person. The predicament that we face is that also other employers declare to South African Revenue Service, and they also some declare with us. Now, if a person has made a declaration, the number of employees to SARS, they believe that that is adequate. They don't have to declare to us. Now, that's what delays the payments. And sometimes we find that people are not on our database and they're not registered, there's no payment. Those are the delays because we have to communicate with the employers and also send the inspectors to employers to beg them or ask them to give us information about it. That's why we have these delays. Now, the issue of mothers, it's a very important point, and unfortunately, there is no special treatment of people who come with all the claims, those who assist the agencies. We want to treat any application as an individual application. And our law doesn't say we prioritize, but our law says if people are unable to come to our labor centers, they can send, if for instance, a husband, a friend, people to assist. But in terms of unemployment benefits, people must come themselves personally. Now, what we have done to alleviate this problem, where we understand that people are sick, if you go to, for instance, the Kempton Park Labor Center, we have actually put a separate queue for the people who are actually coming to queue at our labor centers. It's happening, and we have actually piloted that. Wanted to roll it out because we don't want a person who is on maternity to be in the same queue with a lot of people because there are few, so we have actually started to give them a special a dispensation. That's what we are trying to do. But also, our act does not allow to us to pay money into the bank account of an agency. That's where the problem is. Our services are for free. We have decentralized our functions to be able to process these claims as quick as possible. But if people use agencies, we don't say don't use them. But we say if you come with a lot of pile, we are not going to allocate to you a person who's going to specifically look at you. You have to stand in the queue, and those particular applications will actually be screened as all other applications. I think the problem that we find with agencies, they really want to be given priorities. The other point that is very important is that if our services are for free and some of the people are charged a large amount of money, now it is our concern that if our services are offered for free, people are paying to get our services. Then we've tried our best to be everywhere. We have about 125 labor centers throughout the country. We have satellite offices. We've made it very easy for people to come and apply. But if for instance people believe that they can afford the agencies, they need to do that, but there's not going to be a special dispensation in that regard. The taxi industry, I think, will be regarded as an informal sector, and I don't want to get into the area where I'm not an expert and I'm not competent on, but we know that capitalization as a whole is not a good thing. Now, the taxis have got problems, for instance, because there's a large supply of people with driver's licenses, but the vacancies are very few people. If a person is not happy here, they actually go to another industry. But I think our minister is also on record to say the issue of casualization is not something that we welcome. We need to really deal with that. Chairperson, when we dealt with the issue of how long does it take to process a claim, and I've already indicated the reason there too. Now, the vacancy rate in the fund at this point in time is sitting at, as of 1st March 2008, it's sitting at 16%, Chairperson, which by standard is not that bad. But we need to work very hard to ensure that we fill our vacancies. But the reasons, Doctor, that we have this the vacancies is that people are being promoted to other departments. The Department of Labor is the policy where they look from within. For instance, we have seen recently some of our people applying to the compensation fund as they restructure. And we are happy that the knowledge and experience that they have will actually impact positively in that regard. But in the end, people actually leave because of promotions. We have really situations where people leave because they're quite unhappy with the fund. For instance, there are no cases where we have people who say there's constructive dismissal in the fund. Now, the other point is how do we ensure that the training that we offer is relevant? We have what we call the Department of Labor, fortunately, because we work with the NSF National Skills Fund. We have a list that is distributed, which is a list on critical and scarce skills. So those skills are actually being put there, those that we need to train on. We are trying our best to look at what can make a difference, especially the issues of planning, IT. We need to look at features and tenors. We look at those kind of skills, like, for instance, baking, cooking. And to some extent, we believe that if it comes to domestic workers, we can still help them with driver's licenses. So, for instance, they can add more value to their households in that regard. So we're not going to train people for the sake of training. We have, for instance, working on the department as a whole, career counselors. Because before a person is subjected to this training, it must be voluntary. A person on the profile, we look at your age, we look at your abilities, and we actually advise you with regard to the relevant training that you can undergo. And we also advise you that if you want this training, the chances of getting employment are at this percentage, so that people can know that when they get these skills, they will actually get employed. But we also have to work with the Federal Education and Training Institutions, the FATs, because they have started to introduce very relevant courses in that regard. For instance, if we get a person with grade 9, then we can take to the FET. He can do a course for a period of 3 years, and that person can be employed, like in the case of courses like civil engineering, building construction, and electrician, and things like that. We want to really focus on those kind of skills. But we don't pay them after they've exhausted. We want to start, when people come to our offices, to start to interface with them at that point in time. And while if, for instance, they get work during this period, it's good enough. But if they don't, we actually extend even the training period to exceed the period where they get benefits from the fund. Chairperson, in terms of our employment, how to know whether there has been a decrease or increase in unemployment? Most institutions like the Reserve Bank, the Statistics South Africa, they actually come to our database, because if in the terms of registration, if for instance people come and they register employees, we can see that these are the jobs that have been created in the economy. And if for instance we pay, like we've indicated here, we can see in terms of our database, the previous, the year under review, 2007-8, the economy shattered 526,000 jobs, because those people came to our offices. But I think these institutions, they also look at the informal sector, you know, to determine the unemployment rate. We're looking at what is in our database. And Michael, in terms of the difference between 2.9 billion and 3.2 billion, the difference there is the reserves, because at the end of every financial year, there is a benefit that you pay, but the insurance will come and say, you have actually reserved less or you reserved more. So that the difference between the two is the reserving part. Another question that you've mentioned about our function is rather how to accumulate the surpluses. We are also disturbed ourselves by that, because we can't have a situation where there's poverty in the country, or you pay people for a period of 8 months only, but you still talk about these surpluses and the reserves. What we've done is, in 2006, we actually invited the actuaries to say, how can we impact into the people's life in terms of benefits improvement? We said, can we increase the maternity benefits? Can we look at increasing all other benefits? The actuaries said to us, after doing all the projections, they said, no, don't do any of those things. The only thing that you can do is to increase the replacement rate. Currently, our replacement rate is 38%. Now, they recommended that it goes to a period of 45%, which is the minimum, and the maximum was 68, and then they recommended that it also goes to 75%. But because of the issue of the new social security and retirement reform, other people came and said, but why don't we extend the period? We did our evaluation now within this particular interdepartmental task team on comprehensive social security, and we said it is affordable for us to increase the benefit days from 238 to 275. So those are things that we actually engage in, and we believe that as we move forward, the only problem we have is that we need to change legislation. So we want to change legislation, we give the minister the power to, from time to time, define the benefit rate. That would be much better. But the other thing that I need to mention is that on an annual basis, we have what we call a ceiling. The increase in the ceiling where, for instance, we increase the contribution, and as we increase the contribution, also the benefit that we pay will increase, because we increase that ceiling. At this point in time, I think that ceiling is sitting at the 12.668, but previously it was less. Now we pay a person a percentage of that increase in amount. In terms of the slide you talked about, what you're looking at there is actually the budget. Is the one increase with 3% of the benefits, but we budgeted to pay 3.9, and the actual said the situation is so gloomy, you budget for to pay 3.9, but you only pay 2.9. So that was the savings that we actually took place, and we don't have at this point in time the backlogs in the fund. So we try, within a period of 6 weeks, we try to deal with all the claims. Now, the programs that are offered, it's very interesting that we're offering bursaries in different fields. For instance, the BCom accounting, people do BCom in information systems. People are doing B admin. But you don't have to have a situation where you train people only. We are only sending people to courses where they get a certificate that is accredited. We don't have this where you attend. And I need to indicate that we have employed people with not adequate qualifications from the fund, because they had the knowledge, and we took them to UNISA, for instance, to do different courses, and they got certificates, and at this point in time, they are sitting at NQF level 6, which it shows that there's progress. So we want only courses that have accreditation, and that's how we monitor that we don't send people to go to courses for the sake of going to courses. Now, I think I've dealt with almost all the questions. The issue, the last question was on the skills concerned with the people, whether it's relevant, and we ensure that it's relevant. We also look at, where are you working? Because if you work in finance and you say, I want to do course, for instance, in a different section which is not relevant to finance, for instance, operations, who advise you to say your course is not relevant, do the course that is relevant in your situation so that you can combine your experience and your qualifications to be able to add value to the fund and also to increase your chances or opportunities for being higher or getting promotion in the organization. Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. and thank you very much to your team, and I hope that you keep up the good job. I would suggest that for now take a short tea break. I think tea is getting cold outside, and then we come back. When we come back, we will then hand over to the chief to do the briefing. Thank you. Break, just a cup of tea and stretch a bit, and then we can come back. Thank you.
How are you? I'm so happy. And who are you? From the time that I was before you,
I did indicate that the current compensation fund, as it stands, consists of a completely diminished management structure because of the serious decisions that we have to make subsequent to my appointment as the commissioner, where we had to take disciplinary action against managers whom I'm pleased to report to you that three of them have been finally, as of August this year, dismissed from the civil service, and one was reinstated with a warning. However, subsequent to that, I did indicate that we were at the stage where the public service was introducing what we called VISPs, voluntary surveillance packages, VSPs. And out of that, in the beginning of the financial year, end of six and seven, that is beginning of seven and eight, I did report that we lost, under counting area, almost eight people, those who opted for those packages. And there's been also situations where we've also lost people in other areas. However, the context in which we operate is that we have a commissioner, head of the fund. We do not have the chief financial officer as of date because of the disciplinary process that we've been involved with. The public service does not allow for an appointment whilst an officer is on suspension, so we could not up until the end of August. And I must indicate that subsequent to that, we have gone to the Department of Public Service and Administration to request the upgrading of that post to a level of chief director, because in terms of the requirements, the minister must consult with the Minister of Public Service Administration to upgrade a post beyond director, chief director and upwards. So that process, I'm informed now, is now reaching finality, and I will be advertising the post very soon once we receive the letter from the Minister of Public Service Administration to give us an okay. We'll advertise, but the process is ready. We are going to move. However, we do not have a fully fledged management team. As a result, I have an acting manager, finance, Ms. Van Veek, who, with the good support of the previous commissioner, he was able to release her to assist. So that's the situation we're sitting with. And the only highest level I have is my CIO and the chief medical officer. And you heard earlier that I did indicate that Mr. Lingolo Chokola is the acting manager, executive manager compensation. So we are in the process of constructing a new organization. So it's the start of construction work. So indeed, in an environment where there is construction, there are hazards. There will be scaffoldings, people will be falling off the scaffoldings, there will be injuries sustained as a result, but I think there is a determined plan, project, and objective to get to where we're going to, which I will share with you in the process. I think it is that context that we are under construction that we should be viewed under. That indeed there will be days when we will speak differently as opposed to the pronouncements I'm making today to indicate that. Bear with us, we are under construction, we have a plan, and indeed you should hold us onto the plan that we have embarked upon to construct this organization, to bring it to a status where the previous presentation got to. However, the objectives in
gave the Lord just an opportunity, because this is a feedback or an update on the previous developments. Neither one of us wanted to engage quickly in that, so that we separate from the presentation that we're going to take. I don't know if the members think differently, they can indicate. Maybe you just want to respond to what the commissioner has just indicated now, because there are very critical things that he's mentioned. Acting capacities, vacancies that are now there, and all those kind of things.
Thanks for that opportunity, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I appreciate the commissioner's open-heartedness and his kind of open approach and being honest and taking the committee into his confidence. I really do appreciate that. Mr. McContu and I have almost become friends because I write him so often. We're corresponding on a weekly basis sometimes, or sometimes more, because of the problems and some of the things that he's indicating. My question at this stage is, I understand constructing a new management team. So it's problematic at the same, on the one hand, but at the same time it also gives you opportunities maybe to try new things, to try different things. Now, I wonder to what extent would you be open to put out a tender or to ask private companies to assist you to do certain projects on your behalf for the compensation fund. Would that be an option for you that you would consider?
Right. No, I think it looks like we are okay. Thank you. Can this continue?
Thank you, Chair. I think I welcome the wise advice that has come from Ms. Treya. I think we have read with interest some of the reports that we have shared with the media, especially around the challenges that we have. And I think in that spirit of working together and building this organization, we have taken on your advice. You'll have observed that in October, I think end of October last year, in response to the public's advice, including yourselves, that we have issued a tender already for the accounting services, because this is a very critical area in the fund. You cannot run a fund of this magnitude without a proper, sound financial management structure in place. So what I've decided upon, after consultation with the accounting officer, Mr. Kettledas, that we have issued a tender for a service provider to come and assist and carry us through in this period whilst we are constructing, to hand hold us, to help us identify proper processes and systems that we can put in place to be able to manage this fund better. We will indeed announce the appointment of that provider. I think the tenders have been closed and submissions were made, and we're now in a final adjudication stage. So, and I've also issued a tender for the risk management function, because there is quite scarce resource in that particular area. And also, the current structure of the compensation fund does not provide for a sound risk management function. So we've issued a tender for that. And I must indicate also that we are now also issuing a tender for the appointment of the internal audit functions, because our current internal audit function, which was rested in the Department of Labor, has diminished, because most of the auditors who were doing work for the compensation fund are no longer there. They've taken appointments elsewhere. So, in order to comply with the Public Finance Management Act, we need to have an internal audit function in place before the end of March. So that's the speed with which we are trying to move to ensure that we comply with that. Otherwise, it will be a qualification if we don't address that immediately. So, we're indeed taking up on those issues. Thank you. The strategic objective of the fund in the year in question basically was to provide an efficient social safety net to ensure financial viability of the fund, basically to ensure that we have the necessary funds collected to be able to pay the benefits when people want to claim. We have also said that we want to have an effective cash and investment management system. We also indicated that we want to introduce management reforms and restructure the fund. We've also indicated that we want to enhance quality and access to quota services and information, which is an area that I think we currently lacking seriously. We have also indicated that we want to have an effective data and information management system in place. So these are the critical strategic objectives we've set for ourselves. Indeed, in trying to indicate what is it that we're going to put in place to ensure that those objectives are met, we have indicated that the critical things that we must put in place to ensure that these objectives are met was to, with regard to the reform of the management and the restructuring of the fund, we've said we need to establish an automated integrated claims and revenue management system. As you will know that currently it is very difficult for us to be able to indicate at any point in time as to where is your status of your claim at any point in time because of the disparate systems that we have. We have a financial system that is not talking to the claim system. We've got a compensation system that is not talking to the medical claim system. We've got a scanning and indexing system that is not talking to any. So basically we have systems that were designed around manual processes. So basically we have infrastructure that is underutilized because of the lack of integration. Hence the word they integrated. So that's one of the issues that we said we want to do. Secondly, we said we want to refocus the fund for better service delivery. We have said we need to identify what are the critical challenges that our membership is facing. Employers, medical service providers, and claimants themselves, beneficiaries, injured workers, or deceased, dependents of deceased workers. We need to identify what service challenge do we need to bring. How can we improve the turnaround for the registration of employers? I can indicate to you now currently, just to register as an employer, it's 12 days. That's the standard to register an employer. And I think it will be shocking that the other commissioner there will tell you that it's 3 minutes on his site. It's 12 days in the compensation fund. That's the reality we're operating under. Because of the process that we go through to verify and register an employer, we do not have an automated system that says when you register, we want your trading industry number, then we can get all that information automatically on the system, which industry you are in, which loading we can do to determine your premium, because we work on a separate method from the UI. So that system is done manually. People have to go and open books to check if you're in fishing industry, what rate must work for you. We are saying basically, if an employer reports an accident, why should a hospital or a doctor battle to get paid? Because there is an incident report. The doctor has treated a person. He must be paid or she must be paid. The current challenge is that we have to verify everything because we don't trust our doctors, we don't trust our service providers. I think that's a challenge, is a paradigm shift that we need to bring to say how best can we speed up, because at the end of the day, the injured person there needs assistance now, not for the commissioner to decide whether the doctor is a crook or not, but he needs service now. So those are some of the things that we are saying, how best can we put systems in place to say once an incident is reported, the whole country can know that if the person reports, lands at the hospital can log into compensation and say, I've got Mkhonto here, ID number 667. If the commissioner knows that he's injured, provide services to that patient. I think that's the route we want to go. We're also saying basically that with regard to dependents of deceased contributors, currently they receive pensions. Every year, we need to re-verify the existence of these members. The system is archaic. It goes through the post office, and it's cumbersome. So people stay longer without getting their pensions because of the whole manual process that we're going through. We have to sign forms by post. They have to come back to us. We have to receive them, capture them onto the system. So we need to find better ways in which we could improve this to have automatic verification of these dependents and pensioners themselves, because some of them, once they're pensioned, they leave the urban areas, they go into the rural areas. So we need to address those issues. We're basically saying that the other issue is the settlement of claims. You'll see in my report the time that we're checking currently. You'll recall that at some stage we were held before NEDLAC because it was taking over 2 to 3 years to settle claims. So we are aware of that, and we believe that we are putting the building blocks to address that, and I'll share with you in the process. We also need to improve the collection and access to our services. Indeed, you have heard the UI is over 165 labor centers. In our case, indeed, we have tried to decentralize some of the functions, but you can only access the real service in Pretoria, Hamilton Street, nowhere else. That's the challenge that we are sitting with. But we want to decentralize all those to everywhere in the country where the Department of Labor exists. Indeed, despite all this gloomy picture I've painted, there were indeed some things that we could indicate that we are doing, making a difference in addressing some of the challenges. We had a backlog dating as far back as 2000. And 2000, it's a year that we say that with certainty we could be able to identify and work on. There could be backlog dating 1959, 1963. But unfortunately, you can't do everything at the same time. You need to decide where do you start. So we've indicated that 2000 is a starting point. And we need to identify all those cases in 2000 that we have not dealt with, that there's outstanding information. And you'll recall that also this period also dates to the period of the court judgment where we were to settle with the court about those cases that were not dealt with. I must indicate that with regard to that court judgment and those cases, 88% of the identified backlog we're able to deal with and pay. However, there is the remaining 12% that we are not able to finalize due to information that is still outstanding. And I must indicate that the biggest challenge that I've picked up, which we are trying to address now, which I think most of the lawyers have woken me up about it, is that we normally write back to you to say that your employer has not sent the details. We write to the beneficiary, which in my view, it's not enough to write to the beneficiary a letter to say that your employer has not provided information. In terms of this act, the commissioner has powers that you can summon employers, or you can get court orders to get those employers to be forced by law to bring information. And I think the lawyers are putting pressure on us now, and that's the route now we're beginning to use. We'll no longer indicate that we have written a letter to you. We will indicate that we have informed the employer, and subsequently that we are taking legal action against that employer to provide that information. Because it's the beneficiary that suffers as a result of this delay in getting certain information. We have also seen an increase in employer registration. If you go to page 33 of our annual report, there is a number there that indicates that we had an increase of 387,000 employers in our database, which indicates an increase of 11.4% from the previous year. And we also give a breakdown of that increase as to how many of those employers were corridor-related employers and how many were Federation Employer Mutual Assurance and how many were with Rand Mutual. So we have also gave you a breakdown of that. However, we have also indicated in our report that some of the achievements that we have done is that we have introduced a system whereby we no longer pay checks to beneficiaries or to service providers. We pay direct into the bank accounts of those beneficiaries and service providers. And I must indicate that we started this process with pain because the resistance was not from outside. I must indicate that the resistance to get rid of checks was not with beneficiaries or service providers refusing to provide details. The resistance was internal in the organization, to the extent that this policy has to be imposed, where on a particular day we called internal audit, risk management unit, and we said, you round up all the checks that are available in this institution, because an order was not carried out to get rid of this system. And I must also report that as a result of this process, I have seen a decline in benefit payments. I think it's also covered in my report, but the auditors have picked it up, of 400 million rands. However, I followed it up with our risk unit to identify what's the decline due to the fact that our beneficiaries are unable to open bank accounts. But to date, what I've identified is that these beneficiaries who are entitled to this 400 million are not forthcoming, despite our reminders to them to come forward and collect their money. So, indeed, you may need to assist us. If indeed these are genuine beneficiaries, we have 400 million waiting for them to be collected. So, I'm not going to indicate that either they were ghosts or what, but what I can indicate is that the auditors have picked it up, and we have followed it up, and we're waiting for these beneficiaries to come and collect their 400 million, which is there. If they're entitled to it, because they have to go through a whole process of verification to access this money, and they must have a bank account where we can put the money in. So I'm wondering, had we not done away with these checks, will this 400 still be around? So that's a question that we may have to ponder on. We've also seen an improvement in revenue of 15%, which I'll deal with in the later slides. And I must also indicate that in the current year in question, we are only able to come with a communication strategy, because we don't want to communicate for the sake of communicating. We need to have a plan. What are the things that we want to address when we communicate? I must indeed indicate that currently our image is not good, but we need a plan. So we are going to be working very closely with the government, GCIS, Information Communication Service Systems, to try to address this image. So we will give them the plan that we've come up with, and then they will give us a rollout strategy as to how they're going to roll out that plan to communicate to our members. Indeed, we did. You saw on page 24 of our annual report also, you'll see some of the activities that we have tried to do to communicate. We have seen that there have been some few advocacy campaigns that we've done. We have also carried some campaigns around the check payment system to indicate to our beneficiaries that they must now open bank accounts. And one of the biggest communication that we normally carry every year is the returns of earnings. And I think this campaign, we may need to take a different stance this year, because every time you see the compensation fund on television is when we want money from employers. But we don't appear when we're supposed to provide services, like you see the UIF, Imbizo, all over the country. I think we need to go that direction to call the people to come to us to access our services. So that's a slant that we may need to take in our communication and move away from this annual compliance campaign to employers. Indeed, we do need compliance, but I think we need to re-emphasize also the other part, that we need to advocate our services that people can know better. I must also indicate that there are challenges that we've picked up during the course of the year. We are in the process of looking at an early return policy, early return to work. You realize that currently the Worker Compensation Act fund operates, despite that the legislation provides for that. We are currently paying service providers for the treatment of injured workers, and we forget about the worker, injured worker. What happens to that worker thereafter? We don't follow up to check whether the employer is re-engaging that worker or whether that worker is thrown out. And if he's thrown out, what happens? What alternative employment is available for them? Currently, that is not happening. So one of the objectives we set for ourselves last year, in the year in question, was to come up with a policy on every return to work. And unfortunately, we could not finalize the policy. However, there were a number of processes that were put in place. We participated last year in March at the International Congress on Rehabilitation in Durban, which to a great extent we were strongly involved in the facilitation of that Congress. And subsequent to that, we also had a board stakeholder forum that we had in Johannesburg, Midrand, where we looked at the work that was produced post-Congress. We're currently sitting with a document that is informing us, or you call it a framework document, on how we should manage any return to work, which was discussed by the board. However, the board have taken a decision at its November meeting to say that now that we've got a framework document, we need to have a broader consultation, a bigger conference to discuss these things, where labor, business, and politicians can be involved to drive the direction in which this early return program must take before we could finalize the policy. So we are looking that during this year we will be having a bigger conference to deal with this policy issue. We are indeed not doing well with regards to claims turnaround time. Indeed, Ms. Dreyer's emails are not friendly, as she might want to create an impression. The emails are about service of the people she represents that they're not receiving from the commissioner. We are currently do not have a proper turnaround time. You will see in our annual report that it will say that on 176,541,000 claims, only on those claims, the turnaround time was 61 days. And on 148,741, the turnaround time was 18 days. We shouldn't be breaking these claims. We should be certain to say, like we've had a commissioner say, 6 weeks or 5 weeks. We should be coming to one figure that says turnaround time. The current turnaround time for medical aids is 60 days. I think that's the time that we must be able to get to, of 60 days. However, there is an improvement. If you calculate both numbers, we have in the region of almost 300 and something thousand claims that we paid on average within 35 days, basically. So which means that there is indeed an improvement. While there is also slow progress in the implementation of the claims and revenue management system, I must indicate here that one of the biggest challenges that we've had was to design the process themselves. We have finally come to a point where we got to a point where the process maps were designed and were given over to a service provider, which is Siemens Business Services, in November last year, so that they can then begin to write computer programs to be able to address this. And I believe in terms of our project plan with Siemens, that December 2009 they should be able to give us a new system. But I just want to caution members that it would be prudent of me to indicate that 2010 we would be ready to implement new systems. I prefer to indicate 2010 than 2009, because I don't know what product I'm going to get. It might have some problems. We may need to check it and look at it. However, this is the work we're working towards. We have given them our blueprint. Now they must go and work and give us a system. I think those are the challenges that we have indeed. However, if you look at the financial information then, you will realize that our contributions have risen from 3.2 billion to 3.8 billion, which is 15% increase in revenue. Sorry. Yeah, so where is the way wrong way around? Sorry, I didn't pick this one up. We've also seen that there was an increase in investment income $1.3 billion, which about 51.8%. There was also decrease in other income. This will include things like your penalties and interest to 15 million rand, from 38 million to 15 million. Benefits paid declined from 1.8 to 1.2, and indeed I've attributed this, some of it could relate to the unclaimed monies that I've alluded to earlier on. Admin expenses decreased from 565 to 401 million, and we had a deficit in the year in question of 714 million, and this deficit was attributed also to the provisions that the actuaries made against our pension account in order to ensure that our pensioners' benefits are not eroded by inflation. So you'll see also that our investments finally increased to 16.6 billion at the end of that year. We've also made medical payments to 777,000 medical payments, 320, to the tune of 1.2 billion. We've made medical is for payments to hospitals and doctors. So these are accounts that we receive from doctors. And compensation is the money that goes directly to workers. We've realized that 335,345 workers accessed compensation benefits to the tune of 652 million rand, which in a nutshell indicates an increase from 1.1 to 1.9 billion. The next slide deals with these claims statistics dating back from 2001 to 2008. We have seen that the performance, as it's indicated here, that there's been an overall decline in the number of claims accepted. And the explanation that I've been given is that a lot of those that were not processed are due to insufficient information that is provided, which is related to some of the issues I've raised on either one of the backlogs that we've been dealing with, which I've said 88% of that now has since come through. The next slide deals with medical payment up to March. You'll notice that in 2006 and 2007 we paid 1.6 billion and in the year in question 1.2, there was a decline. And the reason is being that in this 6 and 7 also the bulk of the claims that made that number were those that related to the backlogs that were coming back from 2000. The payments, you also notice that in the previous year we paid 886,000 payments, and in the last year we made 777,320. The same applies to compensation, which I've dealt with earlier on in my presentation, and the compensation, because shows you that there's been a decline in the payment of compensation. Now, coming to the Auditor General's report, given the environment in which we have received what we call a disclaimer report. And this report is based on the following three things that the auditors have raised to indicate that they're unable to give an opinion on the status of the financials of the compensation fund. One, despite the fact that we have collected 3 billion rands, the auditors were unhappy with the manner in which assessments are being managed. I'll give an indication here. In the event where an employer does not submit a return, because for us to be able to know how much we must collect annually from an employer, we send them a return of earnings, which is a piece of paper where the employer must complete the details to indicate how many workers he or she has in his employ, what was the total payroll for that particular period. And in most instances, because of the timing in which we issue these things around February, and we expect employers to bring them at the end of March. For the previous year, this information relates to the previous year. Because when they give you in April, they give you for a year ending March. Some of them, they might be halfway in their with their financials. Some of them could be 15 months. Now, what happens basically is that they do not have all the time to sit down and try to compute this thing correctly because of the deadline that they must meet. And I think you see the adverts on television that if you don't submit by the 31st of March, the following will happen. So we receive these massive amounts of documents and then they get captured on the system. Sometimes, some instances, these are estimates. And halfway on the way, the employer sends you another letter to say, I have now computed the correct amount. Please change these things. So now we're sitting with information on the system that the auditors are saying to us, are you 100% confident that this assessment you've captured there is the correct one? We're unable to address that issue at the present time because of the current nature of raising assessments. It's a problem which we need to find a better way of dealing with it. For those employers who have not submitted, we make use of estimates. What was the last submission in the last 2 or 3 years? So we use that information to estimate for the current year. So because of that situation, we have this problem. So we need to find a way in which we could do it. And also because of these revisions that are happening every day, there are letters coming in to say, that assessment I've given you is incorrect, please change. So it's a moving, our assessment figure is a moving target. The other issue is the material incorrect data. Precisely because of the method of calculating assessments, we raise an assessment to an employer who gives us these figures to say, look, 3 million is due to us. And then we debit the employer with 3 million to say, you owe us 3 million. Now, 2 months later, the employer sends you now, says, this is audited, is a final one. It's 1 million, my assessment. So I'm sitting there with 2 million credit, which is money that you must write off. Now, I'm having a situation whereby our debtors' book has credit balances. Some of them in the tune of millions, 2 million, 3 million, some of them few thousands. And I think I've raised this in my previous presentation to say, indeed we've picked up this situation, and I think auditors have raised it not once, and we believe that we need to come up with the proper policies to deal with this particular issue. Or we may need to come up with a simpler method of working out claims. Because at the present moment, as I've said, that for example, if an employer is doing phishing, the premium for that employer may be 7 premium for that employer, because he may say, I'm doing surface phishing, so you're paying 15% of your payroll. He's doing deep phishing, high risk, we pay 30%. So what we're picking up is that these employers from time to time are saying, but I'm no longer in deep phishing, I'm in surface phishing, I'm no longer in high building construction, I'm doing houses. Now the program must change. So this is the current challenge that we're sitting with, that you will never have a correct amount of your debtors correct assessments. So this is something that we need to come up with. Either we simplify the premium process, which we're engaging currently with our actuaries to come and give us a better way of working out the assessment, because this thing is going to stay in our audit for a long time unless a magic is derived to address this thing. There is no quick fix on it. We need to come with a sound policy and process which we must legislate for it to, in order to work better. The second issue relates to claims incurred. The auditors were saying that you have paid 1.2 billion claims. However, we are unable to satisfy ourselves that indeed that money was due to those doctors or service providers we have paid. The reason is not that we are unable to account for it. The challenge that we're sitting is that the way the compensation system operates is that when you receive an account, you process the account, you pay. And thereafter, you go and file. There is no system in which we can anticipate that, for example, Mr. Mkwando was injured today, he's been to the clinic hospital. Mr. Mkwando, we're expecting to pay 20,000 to MediClinic. We can't predict our liability. Our system doesn't. We work on invoice. As and when we receive the invoice, we process and pay. Now, the challenge is this. We're receiving 20,000 or more medical accounts a day, and we rush quickly to pay. Now, the challenge is we need to file those 20 accounts or more every day. We have introduced a scanning system because that's one way of trying to account for these things. Unfortunately, we had a serious problem with the scanning system because of the service providers who was helping us there. They were not responsive enough. We had a build-up of over 1 million records that could not go through the scanning system because it's easier. In auditors say, can you show us an invoice of Dr. Mkwando? Then I can go to the system and say, here it is. Then I can later on go and look for the physical original. But at least the image is on the system that the auditors can see it. But because of that problem, it takes us longer to get the information. Now, the auditors give you 5 days. When they ask you for information, the turnaround time from them is 5 days because they've got time limits. They can't sit in your organization forever waiting for documents. So if you can't provide them with documents within 5 days, it is deemed to be you are not able to provide the information at a time that was needed. We know about this information up in front, so I'm not putting a blame on the auditors. This is the standard time that they expect the information to be available if you've got a good filing system. So that's the challenge we're sitting with. Our filing system is not in place, and the auditors are saying, we are not going to accept your claims amount. Third issue is regard to the treasury functions. The organization did not have a policy on reconciliation, or it did not have a reconciliation system in place, despite the requirements of the PFMA. And for as long as your reconciliations are not up to date, the numbers that are appearing on your financial statement will not be acceptable to auditors. This is one of the critical issues that they've raised. So for a period of 5 months, we have looked into the recons were not up to scratch. So we are not able to verify any amount in a financial statement, be it income statement or balance sheet or cash flow statement. So that is the challenge that they were having. And as a result of that, they say, because of these three issues, we are going to issue an adverse report. And indeed, despite the explanations, I had to accept the outcome of this report as it stands now. And also I must indicate that our investments with the Public Investment Commissioner, despite the fact that they are well managed, the reconciliation is a problem, because we are not able to track through those investments on a daily basis or on a monthly basis with the Investment Commissioner, Public Investment Commissioner. So there are three critical areas we should have picked up that related to our adverse report. However, in going forward, because we need to address these issues, we have indicated that we will consolidate our EFT system, which means that increase the campaign to mobilize our beneficiaries and service providers to provide banking information to us. We also need to improve our collection methods. We need to address the issue of assessments, as I've indicated already. We need to come up with a better method of doing that. We need also to look at the ways in which we can improve the turnaround claims, which I have already indicated that there is a blueprint that we've given to Siemens, which will address these issues. And I think the other issue basically is the information management system of the Composing Fund, which currently is lacking. And we also prioritizing the recruitment of people to fill up the new posts that we've created in the new organogram of the Compensation Fund that was approved by the Minister in August last year, which we are now in the process of implementing. And I must indicate that in this current year in which we are going, I'm not expecting rosy response, because as I've indicated to you, I still do not have a chief financial officer. I'm operating with one person who is running almost a 4 billion rand fund, acting manager. So we are indicating basically that we have completed the blueprint, and I must indicate that we have worked very closely with Rand Mutual Assurance, because I've indicated to my managers that we are not going to come up with something from the moon. You must go and learn from others in the market. So we are working very close with our sister organization, because they are having good systems. So we must get good systems from them also. So we worked very closely with them to come up with the blueprint that we've delivered. We have also advertised critical posts. I've indicated that the minister has approved the new structure. We should be able to make appointments in due course. We have interviewed, we have made recommendations. However, the challenge relates to the government process also. That for you to appoint somebody in the government system, they must go through NIA for clearance. They must also go for qualification verification. And I must indicate that on the 5th of December, before I left for leave, I have made recommendations of 6 critical posts. Up to date, I can't appoint. I can't sign a letter of appointment because those processes are not complete. So I'm waiting. And time is not waiting for me. The auditors are going to be here tomorrow to come and audit. And they're not going to accept the situation that I'm still waiting for the verification processes. But this is the challenge that we have. It takes longer to employ people in the public service. It takes long. In the private sector, I'll give you a phone. I'll say, come tomorrow. Here's a job. Go and do the following. If I'm not happy with you, I will indicate the process that I will use to remove you, which is a legal process, but it takes longer, the process. As I've indicated, it took us 1 year to finalize the disciplinary process of managers, 1 full year, from September to the end of August. We have indeed written over 25 policies, because this institution did not even have a single financial policy. Most of the policies were instructions that were written down, instructions to say to staff, today you're going to process this way, today you're going to process this way. There was no strict policy in place. So with assistance of the service providers also, we're able to write up some financial policies, which we have now got a board to endorse in November last year. So now we'll be able to have proper policies to work on. We now have an electronic payment system in place, although with problems, because you might have read in the newspapers last year that there was a fraud syndicate that was busted by the commissioner, where we lost over 1.4 million to the fraudsters. Some of them were staff members. But because of the weakness in the systems, we are busy addressing to avoid future losses. But indeed, we have put in place an EFT system that is working. And as I've said earlier on, that we are going to engage the GCIS to work on our media strategy, the rollout of it. And we are also indicating also that we now have a new board that was appointed, and it took its first meeting in November last year. And now we are looking forward to a new workshop to come up with a policy on early return to work, hopefully this year. With that, honorable members, I want to thank you for listening.
Thank you, Commissioner Mkhonto. Honorable members, I don't know what do you do when a baby confesses that he is under reconstruction and development. Whether you guys are letting get away because of that, or at least you still have some areas of caution, comment, whatever you want to call it. And I hope members will be able to do that. Indeed, as a department, we might want to find out of how do we monitor this process. I think it's very critical, whether it's us or the incoming the department or the committee on labor is going to be always here. We might go in there, but I think we need to leave some strong recommendations. This is a very critical entity, and we have got serious problems there. But I also want you to reflect, Commissioner, on how you are affected by 2010. You know, I'm very excited by 2010, but I am seriously concerned about the number of accidents, especially around the construction sector. You know, how is that affecting you? The other area would be on the road accident fund. We've got the bad experience of cases that are paid to lawyers and that never, some of them never reach the beneficiaries. I'm not sure what the situation in the compensation fund, whether we do find lawyers that claim on behalf of these people and whether that money does reach the beneficiaries. I don't know, I don't have any experience, but I know some people have said that I've not taken my case to the lawyers. I'm sure I'm going to reflect on that 4 million that's outstanding, 4 million rand, that there are no responses, whether those are legitimate beneficiaries. If we have to go to Mozambique to file a legal suit, we might decide that the parliament must give us leave, we go and file those. And there are spokes at least very serious that they are not there anymore. And I think on that note, I want to. But I also remember we might want to look at the public service if we don't want to meet with that committee, because some of the areas I'm sure they cut across. Even for instance, you're talking about the time that it takes for us to deal with disciplinary processes, and I think that the committee on public service must be able to come to the play on this one.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I just want to tell the Commissioner, I've been a public representative in various spheres of government since 1991, so it's 18 years now. And part of being a public rep is to receive problems from constituents, your voters, and try and help them through the bureaucracy. Now, through all those years and serving in different capacities and different spheres of government, different portfolios and so on, I've never had as many complaints as the last year and a half that I've served on this Labour Portfolio Committee, specifically related to the compensation fund. So that's quite, you know, I've got some a yardstick to measure against, and that's so that was really quite a shocking experience for me. But I must say, I also have sympathy with you because you've got a huge job on your hands, and I know what I've heard through the grapevine, you've been sent to the compensation fund as Mr. Fixer to come and fix it, and acknowledge that there were problems, you had to go and fix it. But you've got a big construction on your hands. What I want to, I've got some comments and some questions. A question, you mentioned that the three managers have been dismissed and eight people in the accounting area lost and so on, so it's got a huge job of appointing new people. But in also the Auditor General's report, it says that the charges were not in respect of fraud-related matters to some of these individuals. But it sounds like from the 400 million rand that the chairperson also referred to and so on, and the checks, the system that people didn't want to stop that system. It sounds, you know, they must have been definitely fraud. So what were these charges then, if not fraud-related? Why were they dismissed? And isn't there fraud elsewhere in the compensation fund? I just found that a bit of an odd remark there, and I had difficulty in believing that. Then a comment, really, the second one, is just all these problems. And you've explained to us the reason, staff, IT systems, etc., etc., and you're now taking certain steps. But the problem is it's at the cost of the sick, the injured, and the disabled people who have nowhere else to turn to and who sit often without any other other means to turn to, and they are really desperate people. The safety net, the compensation fund, which is supposed to be a safety net, it's got huge holes, and people just fall right through. That's the sadness and the tragedy of it all. That's just a comment. It's not a question. But that is really the sadness of the whole thing to me. Thirdly, a piece of maybe advice. The Commission said you're going to draw up a plan in consultation with the government communication services to improve your image. Granted, your image is not good, but it's because of all these problems. I think you don't need much of a plan to work on that. If you start providing better services and people are getting paid, your image will improve automatically. And also from the opposition, we would kind of commend you when I get receive fewer complaints and I don't have to write to you so often, the image will also improve immediately. My last question. With all the problems there, you receive lots of complaints, and I'm sure not only from me, from other public reps and from the public themselves and from their lawyers and so on. Now, your staff that's still there, they sit and they work with systems that they can't rely on the systems. It's maybe better just to revert back to the old manual paper-based system if the computers let you down or the systems don't talk to each other. But how do you maintain the motivation? What is the motivation of your staff? Hasn't it dropped dramatically? Don't you have a problem with morale of staff? And how do you work to try and improve the morale and keep them motivated, those who are still there and trying to help you turn this ship around?
Thank you, Chair. Mine also, it's also by the way of advice, and I was thinking, you know, you said you had lots of problems in terms of IT and, you know, the amount of time it takes. Perhaps you need to tender for better IT systems, and you should look at State Information Technology Agency, you know, where CETA could help you procure better IT, and maybe that could help expedite the process. And also in terms of branding and marketing, and maybe you need to have a whole new approach. It's also linked to access. That's what people want. They want something that's fast, efficient, less bureaucratic, you know, service delivery. And I was all... Sorry, I have to come back to you. I just forgot one important point. I'm going to have to come back.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like to mention, as a true politician, I was head counting as the meeting was going on. And I think the opposition is now in the majority. So if we ever wanted to take over the Labour Committee, it's the time now. But my question is actually just a question of clarification on the claims. On the claims statistics. There are four columns. The one is claims opened, then claims accepted, and then claims repudiated. Well, since the claims accepted and claims repudiated do not add up to the claims opened, I assume there should be a further column for claims in progress, I assume. But that being said, my only concern is the fact that it seems as if the number of claims accepted never exceeds the number of claims opened, so the backlog is actually just growing, if I understand those figures correctly. Is it right, or am I missing something? Thank you.
I've missed my point, but I've come back to it. Sorry, when Mr. Mkonto started, he said, you know, he was under construction, and many of his staff were in acting capacity. And, you know, this is also related to many of the employees in the public service. And I think we have a huge, huge problem in the public service. And immediately when people take on this acting capacity or acting role, psychologically it does something to them, because you're in an acting capacity. It's almost like a job insecurity, sort of, because you're almost playing a role, so to speak. And it's something we seriously have to look at in the Public Service Portfolio Committee, and something that we have to take on and look at it. And here again, it's also related to the time it takes, to appoint staff. And I serve on that Portfolio Committee, and maybe the Chair was saying, it would be excellent, you know, if we could have a joint Portfolio Committee and take this forward, whether in this term or in the next. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, Mr. Mkonto, for was one way to disarm an opponent by addressing all his points before they can be raised.
Good politician.
Maybe you should be sitting over here. I know it's been touched on by, but you know, I'm very concerned that I also, you get a complaint, and I have been battling to get one, and then a date for hearing is set 9 months in the future. Then a month before the time, it's postponed. Then you start again, and then they say the next hearing will take place in another 9 months' time. It's 3 years, and I've had a case like this. I brought it to your attention last year. I've written to the minister. I just don't even get replies. This is very upsetting. I don't know how many other. The other thing is, you know, you actually, and I appreciate the IT and speaking to computer, you know, all those things. But you know, you actually have and your senior management, but you have a very low vacancy rate according to your posts, you know, 659 posts and 620 posts filled. That's 5.6% vacancy rate, which is extremely low in terms of public service. I mean, you know, my other committee, Trade and Industry, they're sitting with 32%. That's a third of their capacity, you know. This is a very low, although there's some. But you see, the face of it is often the people. I mean, I get so many complaints that people phone, and then they say, well, fax us again. And then they phone again, no, fax us again. I mean, we are going to cut down forests just trying to fax copies and recopies and recopies of the same department. Now, that where does that come in? I mean, that's just pure administrative incompetence. You know, I might be able to, I have filing problems, but surely this is, you know, departments work before we all ran into this IT age. You know, it maybe took a little longer. But that is a big concern. Are those people there capable of doing their job and not using the IT? as excuses. This is something that's of great concern to me. As I said, I take all your points on that. But are the people that are there capable of doing their jobs? And what's being done about them to cultivate then the service delivery? You find, I won't continue on this way. It's quite clear. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will also allude to the words of the Chairperson that we appreciate the frankness, honesty of the Commissioner with this huge problem the Department is facing. But now it's just a clarification on this backlog problem that how does the sector coping or managing to balance the work? Does it mean that you are starting with those compensation cases from 2004 or with the day to day cases that are coming in? How then do you balance that part? And also, Commissioner mentioned the question of employing a service commissioner as a service provider. And that, how will that affect the... How will it affect the reconstruction plans that are on at the moment, or does that delay the process or the pressure of the child care deadline that you have said? I just want to
thank you, Commissioner. Comments and questions, if you may respond.
I'll start with the issue you raised earlier on, that you needed clarification on maybe on foreign workers. Maybe let me just put it clear to members here that foreign workers working in South Africa are covered by the Compensation Act. And if they're injured on duty, they're entitled to access to benefits in terms of medical services, hospitalization. And indeed, if they lose limbs, they are entitled to also to pension if they are permanently disabled. However, I must also indicate that even if they leave South Africa and go back to their country of residence, we do continue to provide the service to them. However, there is a requirement that they must send us a report. It's a form that you complete to indicate that you are still alive, so that we can be able to continue to submit your payments to the account that we have indicated. We'll be working with Department of Foreign Affairs to make those payments to those workers. In our recent discussions with one of the big banks, we are looking at using eForex service because of the challenges that these workers are experiencing via foreign affairs. It takes long to get their money. So we've learned that there's a new facility called eForex, which will be able to use that to pay direct into their bank accounts versus going via similar to their dependents, as long as they can prove dependency to those workers who demised whilst working in South Africa. We continue to pay benefits. The compensation fund operates together with two mutual associations doing the same job. The construction industry is managed under the Federated Employers Mutual Assurance, FEMA. So all construction workers in the country, if they're injured, they get paid via that organization. And all mining workers who get injured or demised, they also get serviced via the Rand Mutual Assurance. However, there are small mines which do not belong to the chamber, that are independent of the Chamber of Mines. Those workers belong to the Compensation Commissioner, so we are processing those workers, similar to some of the construction companies who do not want to, because they have an option. If they don't want to belong to FEMA, they can opt to register with the commissioner. So we make allowance for that. And the dependents also benefit, irrespective of whether they are from South Africa or they are from outside. In August last year, I don't know if it was reported in the media here, we were in Mozambique on a project to distribute limbs with assistance of Rand Mutual Assurance to those injured people who died through landmines and who were injured by landmines and all that. There's an NGO that was donating the limbs, and the Rand Mutual Assurance was providing their mobile van to an expertise to provide those limbs and feed them to those people. So those are some of the things that we are working jointly with these two associations to make sure that we deliver the service to the members. I think there have been around 13 questions that I've recorded here. One deals with to the extent in which the tender for external assistance will assist us. Under normal circumstances, we should not be going for tender. I think that's the painful thing about the government system. Because we are not able to employ timelessly, you cannot change your structure or move it. It's not a flexible thing. There's a lot of bureaucratic process you have to follow. To change the structure, to augment the organization or to downsize it, you go through a process. Now, under most normal circumstances, most government departments don't opt for consultants because it's easy to get the consultant to come in, do the work, and go. So, indeed, under the current circumstances, we do not have an option. Because if I have to get an internal audit function created in a compensation fund, I have to go through an animal called work study. So the work study unit must come in, do an evaluation, tell me how many internal auditors I must have. So it's a process. It can take a year to get the report. So that's why we it's easier to engage external service providers, because they can come in, do the job, and go. It's not supposed to be like that, but I think that's how the process was structured. So that's the challenge. That's why we tend to rely on consultants to assist us. So in this particular instance, we do have a plan. We know what they must come and do. And I think our request is that they must do what we want them to do for us to be able to address some of these audit issues that we are finding. The other issue you raised is a 2010 project and the injuries in the construction industry. As I've said earlier on, we are having a close link with Rand Mutual. I must indicate that the system there is highly responsive. The turnaround there is less than 10 to 15 days. Doctors get paid, beneficiaries get attended to. So there is no problem in that area, despite those numbers, because the organization is focused towards that industry, and it's working very close with the industry, so we do not experience problems there. And also in terms of the parliamentary question that I get, we don't pick up much of the questions coming from those areas. Most of the questions come from the office of the commissioner in Pretoria. That's where the problem is. Lawyers claiming for beneficiaries, it's a new trend that is emerging. It was not there before. In the past, you had the lawyers for human rights, legal resource center. Those were the types of lawyers were engaging us in the past on behalf of beneficiaries. Now, we've picked up now that there's a new breed of lawyers now, similar to the Roast Accident Fund, who are basically saying to these claimants, we will claim on your behalf, but you must agree that your money must go into a trust account of the lawyers. So this has been a new trend, which I have responded legally to that one, because the law does not allow us to put money into a trust account. So what we are saying basically is to say, we will pay the money into the account of the beneficiary if we have to pay, not into the account of the lawyer or the trust account. So that is the attitude that we have adopted, and we are communicating that message to the lawyers that you can represent the beneficiary, but money will not come to you. It will go into the accounts of the beneficiaries. Because at the end of the day, if it goes there, they end up getting a small amount because the lawyers take the bulk. So that is being managed. The charges for those colleagues were disciplined. When the investigation was done, the greatest bulk of the charge relates to negligence, and also it relates to inefficiencies that were there. I think I've indicated to you that there were instances where there were duplicate payments that were made to service providers, some of which those service providers paid back the amount. But subsequently, the duplicates are again paid to the same providers again. We have made you aware that you are paying me more than what I deserve, but nothing was done to try to stop this process, to overpay these service providers. So those are some of the charges that were found. And that there are indeed reports. The system generates reports that indicate that there's a problem there. You might be paying this person double, but they just press the button, say pay, without actually looking into it. So these were some of the charges that were picked up and they were raised. We have not picked up any fraud against these individuals. However, those individuals that were linked to fraud, we have indeed charged them and we have dismissed them from the civil service. We do find certain individuals who are involved in fraudulent activities, but we do charge them and dismiss them. So that process is in place. Hence, the news print that you had last year where one official was involved with the syndicate where they swindled over 1.4 million. We are recovering we are working on recovering the money from their pension funds if we can. But the National Intelligence, NIA, and the police are also working hard to recover some of the money that we have lost. How do we maintain the motivation of staff? In the compensation fund, we got a slogan that it may sound like a joke, but it's a slogan that we're trying to drum up in them to say, together we can make it happen. It's not the commissioner who will make it happen. Without those people on the ground there, this commissioner can deliver zilch. So together with those workers, we are having discussion forums, like this annual report that we have seen here, which is not good. We have had a forum where we've sat down with them, we've taken them through to indicate the problems that auditors have found so that they can understand better what the challenges are. And also we do share with them some of the emails that we receive so that they can see how it happens. I'll give an indication, for example, there's one email which I've sent to all the staff, which I sent one email to three of my managers. I said, here is an email, a complaint from Dr. X. Can you please help me? Because I'm the commissioner, I don't know who must deal with this question. I picked up three critical managers. What I picked up is that these managers were writing to each other. It's not mine, it's yours. So there was a ping pong between managers. It's not mine, it's yours. At the end of the day, why are we here? So this is the type of thing that we circulate to show them that you are not owning up to your responsibility, because no one can claim that it's not mine. For as long as you've got a contract with the office of the commissioner, any complaint that comes there is your complaint. If you don't know how to sort it out, find the person who can help you to so that you can give a response. But the challenge has been that people have been working in silos. I deal with this section, I don't know what's going on that side. I think that's one of the problems that we're having. But we do share this information to staff to make them aware, indeed. And I must indicate that I have resilient people. By virtue of the image of this fund, I think most of them will be gone. But because they're still around, I believe that they have resilience. They're committed to work for this fund. And I believe together we will be able to change this place. With regard to tender for IT services, welcome the advice. Maybe after 2012. Because we are locked in the contract with Siemens until 2012. So we cannot tender to the service of IT. Maybe after 2012 we can be able to do that, but not now. We have to wait with them until the contract is over. Mr. Ringwala will deal with this statistics table about the gaps between repudiated and accepted. I'll leave it to him. I think there was a comment also about the acting people, the acting role, the impact, psychological impact it has on them. I think we have noted that. Honorable Member, you have really touched on a very important point on the issue of the hearings. To be honest with you, I must indicate here that this is one of the issues I've not been able to resolve it. I take responsibility for that. I've not been hard enough to resolve it. The problem is not the date of the hearings. The problem is between officials. You've got the doctors on the other side saying that we want to be there in the hearing. And then you have the lawyer saying we want to appoint a lawyer who can do the good job for us, for the fund. I think the mind is how to defend the fund, not how to help that worker. Because once they say hearing, it means that the worker is unhappy about the commissioner's decision. But we spend energy trying to find the right lawyer to defend the fund. I think that's where the problem is. So we are trying now to resolve this. I have given them a definite instruction that we must get a project in place this year to get all these cases dealt with and finished. Because it's unacceptable that we can have hearings postponed and delayed. Because one lawyer can sit for, if you have a lawyer, you can sit for 5 cases. You don't need to have one lawyer for each and every case. But I think this is how it has been done in the past, the legal section and the medical section. So we have resolved, we have agreed that this is a process we must follow. The low vacancy rate. Yes, it might sound strange that we have a low vacancy rate. Unfortunately, what has happened in the past, that this fund, over the years, as it was growing in terms of number of people it was servicing, the structure never changed to accommodate the growth. What has been happening is that you have a fixed number of permanent employees, and then you have double that is contract workers. So they've been using contract workers to augment the structure. So that those numbers of contract workers won't appear on the annual report because those are not employees. So the vacancy rate that you have there relates to permanent employees. So the challenge is that we do have vacancy rates within the contract work environment, but it's not reflected in the report. The other issue also is the issue of indeed it's a filing system that you keep on. I have a specific case. I've got an uncle in the Free State that has not been paid injury on duty. Since 1999, I've been pushing the case. I'm the commissioner now in the second year. I've not yet resolved it. No, it's because of the documentation problem. It's a documentation problem. We can't find the documents. We can't find the files. That's the problem. We're trying to reconstruct the files. So this is a challenge that we are having. Facts and facts again. Because once you give it to me now, if I'm still busy with it, 5 days later you find Dr. Murake. He didn't see this. He's going to ask you to fax. The following day you found Ms. Van Wyk. She's going to ask you to fax. So there is no system where when you log a complaint, it's logged on the system, it's recorded. Like we go with other organizations. When you enter the system, you can see that this person phoned on this day, this was the answer, and this is the process. So one of the requirements of the new system we're putting in place is to have those log systems to be able to trace each and every case that is coming. At the moment, That's the nature of the job. With regard to the backlog, Dr. Muraka, you'll try to deal with that one because you are dealing with medical claims. How do you balance the backlog versus the new claims that are coming in? Which ones to give priority and how you manage that? Outsourcing, how will it affect our reconstruction plan? I believe that we believe that in the interim, we cannot do without the help of outsiders. We need them, but we have identified the areas where they must go. Like I've indicated, the area of debt collection, for example, the area of risk management, internal audit, that's the area where we'll rely on outsourcing functions and its accounting services for the interim until we have a proper structure in place. Thank you very much. I'll pass to my colleagues to answer the remaining questions.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of Parliament. I'll deal with the question of the statistics, land statistics. Firstly, I think I just need to give a little background on the processing of claims. Remember that we are dealing with a condition of an employee. So the nature of injuries are different to all individuals. So the number of claims that we receive every year, they are also coming, in accordance with the nature of injuries. As a result, you are noting that there is a trend. From what 2011 on that table, there will always be a variance between claims registered and claims accepted. The variance or the margin is only between 30,000 to 40,000 in other years. But it's hovering somewhere between 13 to 15%, from 13 to 15% of the overall claims. So what happens is that some of these claims are minor or are claims of a less serious injury. In which case, people receive treatment from their workplace, not from the doctor. First aid treatment. One of the requirements for us to accept a claim or to adjudicate on a claim is to link the injury to the accident. You need medical evidence to prove a personal injury. Without that medical report, you call it the first medical report from the doctor, the treating doctor. So if this employee didn't consult with the doctor, he was given first aid treatment because his injury could last for about 1 to 3 days. So such employees, normally they don't go to the doctors and then employers don't furnish us with these medical reports. You cannot accept that condition because you cannot prove personal injury. After 2 days or 1 day, this person went back. I think I want to explain that all injuries where the employer was off duty for 3 days and less, we don't pay any compensation. Yes, we do pay medical treatment if that person went to see the doctor. So when you look on that table, there's also this claims paid. You also know that of those accepted claims, there is a variance between accepted and claims paid. The number again is that there could be a claim that we had first medical report and we could adjudicate and accept the claim. But still, the employee had no permanent disablement, so we couldn't pay anything. So you almost find claims like that. So we have actually observed that of the claims that we receive, 65% are claims of less serious injury. They are not more than 4 days and upwards to 2 weeks, but some of them you would find that there is no permanent disablement. So that is the explanation When I got down to 2007, you will notice that by the end of March 2008, we had accepted 164,000, and then we had made payments to 122,000. By then, those loans were only 1 year old. So some of the medical conditions of these people go beyond 1 year, up to 2 years. Even our act says you must allow that loan to be open until 2 years. And you cannot assess permanent disablement until the condition has stabilized. That's only then that you can assess permanent disablement on receipt of that final medical report. So basically, when we start again here next year, that number of 192,000 would have changed. That number of 164,000 on the accepted limbs would have changed. But it has stabilized once it goes to somewhere like 15% difference. So that is basically the explanation. So starting from now 2000 up to 2004, we had to review all those claims because we were not sure as to which claims have not been finalized, as our systems do not give us that. So we started in 2006 reviewing and reviewing and reviewing until that process ended in the 31st of March 2008. So we have finalized all those claims. We have seen that all these cases don't have medical reports, we cannot do anything. But fortunately, they are of less serious nature. Thank you. I hope that suffices.
Thank you. I'm going to ask the Honorable. You see, the majority party has taken over once more its rightful place because you see, the majority party has disappeared now. If you could just summarize your questions, and maybe as we deliberate, we might come back to you for some of the questions that you must still want some clarity on. I'm not pushing you, but if you could. Why more? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, members of Parliament. There was just one question based on the incoming calls, the balance between the incoming claims and the and those, there was mention of 2000. And I must say that maybe the member was referring to the backlog where there was a project specifically identifying the backlog from 2000 to 2004. And there was a special team that dealt with that. The project was made, started, which dealt with all those claims identified between those periods. Other than that, what happens is that when you have incoming claims, there are new claims. When they get into registry, they need to, if there are new claims, they are verified and then they are registered. If you've got old claims that are coming in on the same day, the old claims are not going to be registered. They are already on the system. So it will be outstanding information, or maybe there will be a claim for payment for a service that was rendered. That will be taken directly to the respective section. If it is for compensation, it will go to compensation, where compensation will deal with it. If it is an old claim, after being registered, it will also then also follow the other subsections where it is supposed to be lodged in. So I then actually just look at the incoming and then put another incoming, look at the old cases, and then afterwards we look at that. We look at them simultaneously as they come, but they've got different ways in which they're being addressed as they come in. Thanks.
Thank you, the Dem Conto and your team. I was a little bit worried when referring to those limbs that you are transporting in trucks to the various places, but you see, the Secretary of the Committee quickly sent me out to say, no, he actually means the artificial ones. And I was only going to get all these limbs that you were transporting. So on that note, I want to thank everybody. We are going to be deliberating on these presentations. And if I'm allowed to call you back, I'm sure you will be glad to communicate when you will be available. But thank you very much once more, and to the media people and everybody else. And I hope that we meet you again tomorrow, those that are able to come. If the members are going to be, I can see that they are all
disappointed, I'm hoping that they are not going to get apologies by the end of today. Mr. Spence, at least more of you are going to be here tomorrow. Fine. Thank you.
Lunch is outside.